On this episode of the Tribe of Millionaires podcast.
Mental health experts are noticing an alarming trend. The rate of suicide.
Died by suicide.
It's okay to be a man.
It's not okay. It's necessary. What the hell are we going to do without men? You look around the city here, you see all these buildings go up. These men, they're doing impossible things. They're under the streets.
What does it mean to be a man? Let's dive in. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Gruber. And today is a bit of a unique episode, although I do plan to do more of these. I'm going to do a solo cast, a solo podcast, just me talking on a specific topic that I think is relevant to the listeners that we have, which is, if I look at the stats, mostly men, mostly middle age, more on the, you know, 500K plus net worth socioeconomic ladder, accomplished, driven individuals. Of course, we have women. Of course, we have younger, older, richer, poorer, so on and so forth. But that's kind of the center. And I've gotten enough questions on different topics, whether it's things that I'm doing, whether it's things I've learned or we've learned by listening from different guests, that I think the solo episode structure is a really, really good idea to just add some of my perspective, I guess, for anybody that's curious to hear about it. So today, what I want to talk about is the concept of what it is to be a man, what it is to be a man in 2024. I touch on masculinity on certain episodes. It comes up, and I'll explain why in a minute. But I figured I would just do a solo episode on this. I have a couple of bullets, otherwise I'm riffing here. So I'm just going to kind of go. But a little bit of context. I just recently interviewed Tito Ortiz. If you don't know who Tito Ortiz is, he is one of the original UFC MMA fighters. I interviewed him live in Fort Myers, which is where he lives, Naples area. And this guy came into the studio and he was what you would expect. Just a mountain, a huge guy. Like he reached out this giant paw to shake my hand and it was like bam, bam from the Flintstones. Like my whole body was going up and down. Just a huge guy, super nice. We had a really great chat. In fact, he went long. I was planning like an hour, hour and 10. I think we went an hour and 40 on that episode. And three separate times during that episode, I saw one of the, what many would consider to be toughest, strongest, most manly men you could be around, break down in tears over topics that really haunt him, over things that sit with him from the past, the present, and really the future. So that was kind of point one on what inspired this episode. And the second is, after I left, I had to go back over to Fort Lauderdale to do a few interviews there. It's about a 2.5 hour drive across what they call Alligator Alley, just kind of dead space in between, right through the Everglades, in between the two coasts of Florida on the south edge of Florida. And I got on the phone with my best friend that I've had for, 30 years, maybe more, a long time. He lives in California. I don't, obviously. And so we haven't lived near each other for a while, but we talk often enough. And he's a year away from retiring from his role. He's in corrections in California. He's a year away from retiring. And listening to him, again, a guy that I always look at is like, he's always kind of this, you know, strong go guy. Listening to him really describe the struggles that he and many like him in that role especially have through the career he chose, but maybe more importantly, toward the end where, without getting into detail, he's sort of getting chewed up and spit out. Add into that a couple of folks that I know over the last year, know of, or I've talked to or had some relationship with men, high-performing men, very driven, successful men that took their own lives. And it really rolled up this whole idea of, you know what, I want to talk about what I thought about on that drive, what I thought about after Tito Ortiz, what I thought about when I remembered the two gentlemen that ended up committing suicide, what it is to be a man. So who am I speaking to? Men, obviously, on this podcast that are listening. Women that are listening, you know, can or agree, cannot agree, that's fine. And even the men that are listening, what I'm going to talk about, you may resonate with some, you may resonate with all, or you may know others that resonate with these things. I can't speak for all men, but I think in speaking today on what I say it is to be a man, the reality of what it is to be a man, I think I speak for most. And again, those that I don't, I think can relate to at least some of what I'll talk about today. And the other thing I want to be clear, and this is part and parcel of being a man, is none of this at all is intended, not even intended, none of it is victimhood. No one's asking for sympathy. I'm not. I just simply feel that we're in an era with all the things I just told you about, where what it is to be a man needs to be more clearly defined. If not to help somebody listening to this who's struggling with mental health, then to help somebody that you know that's struggling with mental health, to help your husband if he's struggling with mental health, or maybe even for the women in our lives to understand just these aspects of what it is to be a man. So I tried to boil this down into a few headlines, and then I'll give context under each of them. So here's my first one. All men idle at an 8. So we are in a constant state of alertness. If you look at your RPM meter on your dash, dashboard, right? It goes like, I don't know what it goes up to, 10 or 12 or 8 or whatever. The point is, we idle. Where cars idle at like a 2, 2.5, 3, we idle at an 8. We're always ready. When anything creates, I don't know, conflict or the need for heightened alertness, at least our perception that it's needed, we spike to a 12, but we're idling at an 8 at all times. Here's an example that came to me. And again, it's kind of a silly one, but I think it's so true. Sometimes when I'm driving, this happens a lot actually, when I'm driving and we're at a stoplight or stop sign or something, and somebody's doing something in front of me, my wife will reach over and she'll hit the horn. So she'll beep the horn on my behalf. Now in the moment, I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, leave the horn alone. This is my car. I'm driving right now. But if I'm being honest, I'm already on alert. I'm already driving, my wife, my kids in the car. I'm already on alert. Now, some might be like, texting or whatever. That's not being on alert. I'm on alert. I know everything that's happening around me at any given point. When she hits the horn, you have to think from a man's perspective. Now it's like, what did that just set off? Who's getting out of the car? Do I need to be ready for conflict? Is somebody going to come back at me? Who's going to back up into me? We go to a 12 instantly. Our alertness is already idling high, and we go to a 12 right after that. So I think it's important to know that there's a great reel that's out there. A lot of people have done it, where it's a guy and a girl walking through like an airport, and they zoom in on each of them and sort of listen to their inner voice, their inner thoughts. And this is so true. The guy is going, this is so true of men. I can't speak for women, but I can speak for men. The guy is going, okay, 17 minutes until we have to get to the gate before it becomes an issue. Kids need to use the bathroom. Got to get to security. It looks like the line is going to take us about 10 minutes. Like, we're just calculating. Why is that guy walking that way? Why is this guy walking so close behind me? Let's move over to the side so that he can go by. Don't like that person be behind me. That's all going on in our brains. And the other side of that meme or that gif or that reel is they zoom in on the woman and she's just going like, la-dee-dee-dee-dee. Like, again, I'm sure that's not true of all women. But the point is men are constantly on alert. When I go to hotels, high rises especially, and I don't know, I'd love to hear from some of you on this if you do this as well, but I actually map the escape route, like from the balcony. Like, what balcony do I need to jump to? How low can I get down before we can find a ladder or whatever? What's our escape route? Like, I'm already thinking about that when I go to a hotel. So I've talked to a lot of guys in GoBundance especially, and I think that's a shared trait. We idle at an 8. So that's the first one. The second one that I wrote down was that we are in a constant state of fear. And that may sound a little bit jarring. Like, what do you mean fear? You know, even men might be like, I'm not afraid. What are you talking about? I'm not afraid. But it kind of goes back to what I just mentioned a moment ago. The reason we're on alert is we fear those things that we can't control. To be a man and to have masculine traits and to be born with this masculine energy means that we are predisposed to want to control, to want to dominate. There's an innate hormonal instinct that we have. So imagine if you're a man who's born with the traits to dominate and control. When you learn that you can't, that what your kids decide to do, where they decide to go, whether or not they decide to be great people, when they go to school, whatever it is, like we can't control any of it. We can't control any of it. So in the absence of control, there's two things. There's fear and acceptance, but I think they go part and parcel. So men live in a constant state of fear over the welfare of others around them, not so much for themselves. Most men I know are the exact opposite. There's very little selfishness in the true man, in my opinion, what I've seen. But we live in a constant state of fear. When I was talking to Tito Ortiz, one of the reasons he broke down crying was, you know, he's got two twin boys that he's working so hard to make into well-adjusted men. And the unknown of what lies in front of them scares him. And I think I can speak for most dads who have sons on this, but the realization that our sons need to, at some point, go from kids, innocent, loving, to being in a constant state of alertness and being in a constant state of fear as they grow to men, that heightens the fear. I could speak for me on that. Again, I can't control it, so it becomes fear. So that's my second takeaway that I thought about quite a bit, is we live in a constant state of fear. And then lastly, sharing is hard for men. Surface level sharing is fine, but the real deep stuff, and it usually goes back to, if I share, I'm placing burden on others, maybe my wife, maybe my kids, maybe my friends or whatever, which is why so many of us, me and many other men I'm sure listening to this, have found GoBundance, this community, this tribe of healthy, wealthy, generous men. There, I actually can lay a lot on them. I pay every year. I don't go to everything. I don't do everything, but I pay every year for that. It's the best money spent every year to just be able to take this thing that I don't feel I can lay on just anybody and lay it on other men who are in the same spot and are paying the same money to have the same experience. but otherwise sharing is hard. There was a story that I read about an Alaska Airlines pilot, maybe some of you have heard this, that was in the jump seat. He was like a 20-year pilot with, I think it was Alaska, we'll see, but he was like a 20-year pilot with Alaska Airlines, and he hopped a ride from like Seattle to Phoenix in the jump seat. If you're not familiar, you know, pilots can, off-duty pilots can kind of go on the plane and just kind of like tag a ride. They sit in the cockpit in this little like fold down seat in the back of the cockpit. And sometime after takeoff, this pilot, 20 years, no issues, tried to like rip the panel off in the cockpit in such a way that he could disable the engine and take the plane down. Crazy. The two pilots in the cockpit disabled him and brought him to the back of the plane. The passengers on board knew nothing of what happened other than they had to make an emergency landing, I believe, in Portland. So they leave from Seattle, I think it was, maybe it was Vancouver, and they land in Portland on the way to Phoenix or Salt Lake City or somewhere down in that area. So this meant, like, initially it's like, oh, geez, man, guy's nuts. Like, well, what a lunatic, what a crazy guy, all this stuff. And I was reading a bit about this whole thing, and, you know, he's got a wife, he's got kids, and it's like, ah, he lost it. He's got mental issues or whatever. But what I learned from reading some of the nuance in the article was that this is a guy who struggled with the idea of seeking help for whatever he was struggling with, because if he did, that could disable his ability to be a pilot. He could be deemed mentally unstable to fly a plane. So he did what a lot of us do. He fought through it. Now, does he deserve blame? Absolutely. Is he responsible and culpable? Absolutely he is. I don't think that he deserves any less a sentence or any less a whatever. He tried to take a plane down with a lot of innocent souls on it. He has full responsibility for that. But when you take that part out for a moment and you consider if he was unsure about seeking help, felt that I could get through this. I mean, if you're a guy listening right now, as we sit, what things do you need help with, small or big, that you're telling yourself I can just get through? The instinct to nut up, man up, figure it out, get it done. Don't burden anybody else. You're a man. Put it on your shoulders and figure it out. I think all of us can at least understand that. In this case, or in the case of the two men I mentioned earlier that ended up taking their lives, it became too much and they saw no way out. But that's what it is to be a man in that regard. We are afraid to share. One thing I will say, I think, is maybe as a fourth thing or just an aside on this, is on that part about sharing is hard. You know, we don't want to burden anybody. We really don't, as men, I don't think most men do, expect our needs to be met. We don't expect that. So here's an example. It's kind of a funny example. And I shared this at an interview I did in Lake Tahoe at a GoBundance event with Tom Bilyeu. Before the interview, I put up a video of, it's called Nail on the Forehead, I think it is. And the video is really funny. It's a woman talking about this pressure she feels in her head. And, you know, she's trying to describe to her husband or boyfriend like this thing. And when they zoom out a bit, they show the boyfriend like staring at her forehead, and it reveals that there's a nail, like a hammer and nail stuck in her forehead. And the boyfriend or husband's like, well, yeah, I mean, you have that nail in your forehead. And she's like, it's not about the nail, right? And she's talking about like, you're always trying to fix this. I just need you to listen. Every man listening to this right now who's in a relationship with a woman has had that discussion, knows exactly what I'm talking about. You're presenting us with something we see as fixable, that could be repaired, that could be taken care of, but you just want us to listen. So as a man, many of us, all of us, understand that, and we do our absolute best. Our absolute best to just listen. Okay, I know this can be fixed, but I'm just gonna listen. That's what I'm supposed to do as a man, to support my wife, my girlfriend. But I've never ever heard, ever. Again, we never expect our needs to be met. I've never heard anyone say to women, hey, your man needs to fix things and you gotta let him do that. So while you need to be listened to, sometimes he needs to fix things. That same need, that same annoying feeling that women get about like, this guy just, I mean, I don't even want to tell him because he's going to want to fix it. And all I want him to do is listen. That same feeling is maybe amplified in men. That's my perspective. I'm not a woman. I can't say that for sure. But amplified in men around, we want to fix it. We want to repair it. We want to get it done. So that just gives you an idea or a glimpse into what I believe right now is a bit of the crisis of masculinity. Again, no one's asking to be felt bad for. In fact, please don't. But if this solo episode, I don't know, if one sentence, I don't even know how much of it will be relevant for all of you, but if one sentence landed, or if it just opened the door for you or somebody that you know to reach out and ask for help, because Again, we don't. Sharing's hard, but we need to. We need to. So maybe that's the other part of this that I should say is, even though we live in a constant state of alertness, even though we live in a constant state of fear, even though sharing is hard, it doesn't mean that we as men can't do better and won't do better. But if this episode helped anybody just unlock and talk through and have this conversation with their buddies or their wife, or if you're in GoBundance, I would love for you to play this episode for your pod and have a discussion about it. That I think it was worth the 20, 25 minutes, however long I've been rambling along here, to share this with you. But what I do want to do, I want to leave you with a song. And along the journey of driving from Fort Myers over to Fort Lauderdale, this song popped on. And I listened to it the next night. Actually, it was the other way. From Fort Lauderdale to Fort Myers, the song came on. On the way back is when I was talking to my buddy. But I listened to it the next night after talking to my buddy when I was in the hotel. And I just kept listening to it. And the lyrics were really cool and all of that. And I think it's just a really, really good anthem in a time where I believe that men are crying out for camaraderie, men are crying out for fellowship, and men are crying out to be heard and seen. I think it's a great way, a great song to anchor all of those things. And what I'd ask of all of you after you hear this episode, hear this song, is email me. I'd be curious to hear how this impacted you. Jamie@jamiegruber.com. I'd love to hear from you. I hope you do. I hope you take me up on that. I'll do my best to answer every email that I get. And for those of you that are struggling, listen, if you're in GoBundance, talk to your pod, talk to your local chapter, call a guy that you've connected with at an event. If you're not, look, just apply. GoBundance.com. If you're not right for the Elite or Champion group, you can join Emerge, but there's plenty of options for you. And I believe truly that GoBundance for me has been a major, major driver of me maintaining a level of mental health, even though many of us feel like we live in a world where we're vilified a bit, where toxic has become not a form of masculinity, but just masculinity. So that's my call out to you. That's my plug for GoBundance. And I don't think I can make a better one, to be honest with you. It's been an amazing experience for me over the last 5 years. And I hope you take me up on applying and getting on a call with somebody to talk through it. Check this song out. I appreciate y'all. Have a great day.